Welcome to Cognis Education Untapped podcast, the show where we bring you experts and leading practitioners in the field of education.
Hi everyone, my name's Helen Gasparelli and I'm the Head of Inclusion at Cognis. Today we'll be meeting with our Traveller Education Service to understand more about their role and the community that they support both here in Sutton and in Merton. Today I'm joined by two amazing members of the Traveller Education Service, Jackie and Anna, who've both worked with the Gypsy, Roma and Traveller communities for a number of years now and have a wealth of experience removing barriers to learning and promoting the inclusion of travellers in both education and in the community. So welcome Jackie and Anna, it's great to have you here today. Can I ask that you both just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourselves and your role?
So my name's Jackie Cunniff and I'm the primary advisory teacher for the Traveller Education Service. So the majority of my time is spent working with traveller families and schools in a primary setting, so anything really from year one up until year six. And it's about access to education and engagement with education. So that might take a variety of forms, from helping to get school places to supporting and providing interventions in school. But that's just a brief summary, so I'll pass over to Anna so she can explain what she does.
Hi, I'm Anna Akra and I'm the Early Years and Family Liaison Officer for the Traveller Service. Pretty much exactly what Jackie said, same scenario, but I tend to deal with the younger children, so nursery age children. That can be preschool, nursery, right through to, well, we kind of have a bit of a crossover, don't we, Jackie, depending on how busy we are and where the numbers fall. But I normally can go up to about year two, but very much encouraging those younger children to get into a nursery setting very early on so that they become aware and familiar with an environment, an academic and learning environment prior to starting school in reception.
Thank you for that. So most listeners to this podcast may not have heard of a Traveller Education Service. So you've told us a little bit about your role, but what's the aim of the service and what are some of the other elements of your role that you carry out?
So like we said, I think the main theme really is access to and engagement with education. So the traveller community in general quite often might have poor literacy levels or limited technology skills. And they might not have a great deal of experience with the education system. So they might not be aware of admission processes, how to gain school places. So our role really is about A, helping them to understand, making sure they get the school places they need at the right time, at the right transition stages, but also to help schools have an understanding of their community, their culture, and what they may or may not be aware of within the system, so that we can get them both working together to make sure those children are afforded the same opportunities as other communities and that they get the best opportunity to succeed in education.
I think one of the barriers that we face quite often is that the parents themselves haven't had a very positive experience in education when they were younger, and they have a lot of sort of preconceived ideas and worries about sending their children to school. So we're very much there to encourage, support, explain how things work now, how things have improved, how people are more aware of the traveller culture, more aware of their needs, etc. So I think because we have such a good relationship with those families, they trust us, and I think that's really helped with getting more and more traveller children into education. And very much at the young age and primary school, we are very successful in getting those children in and keeping them in. The other barrier, I think, is as well, it's not a barrier because they're traveller children. They do quite often go off travelling for periods of time during the academic year. And because we have such a good relationship with other teams in Cognis, like admissions and the schools that those children attend, when they do come back from travelling, we're able to get those children back into schools really, really quickly, which is really important. So that way they're not missing any additional time on top of the time they've already been away.
And I think, Helen, sorry, you were saying about the need for the Traveller Education Service, and that really is one of the big things. Like Anna said, historically, travellers and travelling communities would travel around all of the time. And whilst that may not be the case anymore, although some do still travel for work and other purposes, they are used to a more nomadic lifestyle. So being settled and applying for school places in the same area isn't something they're overly familiar with. Obviously, that's changing over time and becoming more and more of a consistent approach from the community, but historically, where they've not done it, they're not so aware or experienced in how to do it. So it really is just closing that barrier, helping to build relationships between them and the schools so that everything is more smooth and they understand and they feel happy and content that their children are being well looked after, and more importantly that they now place a better value on education. Because again, previously, where they would travel around for work, there wasn't necessarily an importance on reading and writing and learning in schools, whereas these days we all know everything's online, everything's a form that you have to fill out, and even the mobile tradesmen that are part of the traveller community, they now have to create their own websites. There's no door-to-door knocking anymore, they have to send out leaflets, so it's really important, and they can see the value of education and making sure the children can read and write and have basic math skills.
So there's quite a lot there. So there's quite a few key things that I want to explore a little bit more. And one of them is about this role of bridging the gaps between education and family. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and what that might look like in a day-to-day picture?
Well, basically, our week's kind of like divided up, isn't it, between working in school. So once we've actually aided the families, filled in forms, submitted applications and got those children into school, we then offer support to those children within the school environment. Obviously we try and help as many as possible, and me in particular, because I work with the younger children, my usual day is doing an awful lot of phonics. So I'm getting them at the very, very beginning when they need to learn those basic sounds to progress further. Some days I might only be in one school and see several children, and then on another day I might be visiting three or four schools in a day. So obviously that takes quite a bit of planning so that you can maximise on the amount of children that you can see. So it's one-to-one intervention. So we're going in, taking the children out of class, working in a quiet space together, and really trying to help them catch up with their peers. And get them to a good place. And then once they get a little bit older, I hand them over to Jackie, who sees them through till year six. A lot of admin around that. So it's keeping records on everything we do with the children, and giving those two schools at the end of each term so they're aware of what we've done and the support that we've provided for those children. But obviously it's good being in schools because you have regular contact with those class teachers, with the SEN coordinator. So you're constantly discussing that child's progress or areas of need. And also if there's an issue that school are having, sometimes contacting a family or resolving an issue with a family, then that's something that we would get involved in and help with and try and resolve. And I think that's actually quite an important thing, isn't it? Because I think historically, if families had an issue with school, they tended to just sort of like, right, that's it, I'm pulling my child out of school and either disappear or want to move to a different school. Whereas now I think, thanks to our service and our intervention, I think we're able to support them, help them understand, resolve the issue with school and keep those children in the school, because obviously moving on is not the best thing for them always. Sometimes it might be in very rare circumstances, but there's hopefully always a way to resolve the issues, and that's what we help with.
And I think one of the big things that Anna does as well with the little ones, obviously we've already got that trusting relationship with the families and with the schools, but it's that friendly face when those children first start. Someone to help them feel at ease, to settle them into the school routines, learn the difference between what's allowed at home and what's allowed at school, which for traveller communities can be very different. So certainly at home, traveller children are quite often told to sort their own differences out, when they've got into a dispute with one of their friends, and sometimes that might mean having a bit of a push and a shove with each other. Now, obviously in school, that's not acceptable, and we really have to teach them that whilst it might be okay while you're at home, in school we don't use our fists, we use our words, and we talk about our feelings to make sure these things don't happen. And similarly, just being aware of the culture and the fact that quite often traveller children will be included in adult conversations at home. So when they speak to an adult in school, they might say things which an adult might find, oh, that sounds quite disrespectful, or I'm not sure you should be talking to me like that. Whereas at home, it's quite acceptable and they're included in that kind of adult conversation. So it really is about just kind of helping both sides of the parties to understand each other. So families know us, they trust us, and we help get them into schools and build the relationship there. And from schools, it's helping them to understand cultural values and beliefs and practices that might take place at home, which might differ from other communities within school and certainly what's acceptable within schools.
So you've talked about the importance of bridging cultural gaps between school and home. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you do that and how you raise awareness of traveller culture, not just in schools, but in the communities that you work in?
I think, Anna, you've probably got a really good example. I'm thinking about a child in a school that when they started, they had no previous school experience and school had immediate concerns and wanted to refer. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, so there was a particular child who had no previous experience of assessing of any kind, started in school in reception and struggled with the routine, the rules, understanding acceptable behaviour at school, both with his peers and his teachers. And school, from a good place, wanted to try and offer him as much support as possible, but they wanted to call in behaviour support. They wanted to call in to the SEN to see if there was an issue or a need there. And very much I was able to sort of diffuse the situation because I just felt he hadn't had the input and the experience of a setting that the other children had had. And actually, he probably just needed time to settle down. He was used to being allowed to do what he wanted when he wanted. And obviously, he just needed to learn how school works, how the environment works, that he has to do what everybody else is doing. And there are certain times when you're allowed to go off and do as you please and choose. And it did take a while, but eventually he did settle. He did really well academically. He caught up quite quickly with his peers, and everything worked out fine.
And leading on from what Anna said, obviously we provide advice and guidance for schools on an individual case like that, but also we do provide cultural training and staff inset training. There are resources available on our webpage where you can go, and there's useful websites where you can find out about traveller culture and traveller history, which is particularly poignant this month as it's June, which is Traveller History Month. But there's also an Understanding Travellers presentation on there, so a virtual training that's available to anyone to download for free to watch. So schools can use it as part of their training for staff, just to give them more of an understanding about traveller culture and some of the things we've talked about to make sure that those children aren't getting into trouble when they don't need to, or aren't being misdiagnosed with special needs when actually, like Anna said, sometimes it's just about that adapting to a new routine, a new way of life, a new set of rules. So I think that's really key in what we do. It's not just about helping the families and making sure they know about the system. It's also helping schools understand how that community fits into their system.
Just going on from that, as part of Gypsy Roma and Traveller History Month, Jackie sent out a school assembly presentation, and the school that I was in this morning are actually going to do their assembly tomorrow. And what was really lovely is because you're recognised in school, people know who you are. I think probably about four or five members of staff came up to me as I was walking through corridors and saying, I'm really looking forward, we're having your presentation tomorrow, we're really looking forward to listening to it and learning all about what you do and all about the traveller culture. So that was really nice. It was a really positive thing. And they're going to, they have quite a large cohort of travellers in this school, and they're going to have all the entries of the art competition that we ran for History Month, and all the children are going to stand at the front holding their pictures in front of the whole school, which I thought was really lovely. So they're really embracing it and celebrating it, which is really nice to hear.
It's such good practice for inclusion. So we're really proud that we're able to help make that difference and make schools aware that it's History Month and get them involved, get them including their traveller pupils in so they can feel special and recognise those. Really positive. And like Anna said, we've had loads of really positive feedback from schools, not only about the resources we've sent out for History Month, but about the training as well, and about the competition that Anna set up and run, which wasn't just the schools, actually. The children were so thrilled to be included. And some of the parents, which sometimes this community can, it can be quite difficult to engage the parents with their children's learning. But actually, what we found is just with our constant communication and relationship building, and where each year and each new set of children that go through have a better experience, we've now got parents on board, and they're asking us to send us links to see the pictures of their children's work and how they're being recognised in school. So it's a really, really positive feeling. You really feel like you're making a difference.
And I think that's what's coming across from the things that you've both been saying about the work that you do. It really is about bridging that gap. It's raising awareness of the traveller community and giving an opportunity to celebrate the wonderful work that the schools are doing, the wonderful work that the children are doing, the engagement with families, and really making a difference to how people understand that community and the value and the importance of education. Can you tell me a little bit more about the competition that you ran?
Yep, we contacted all the schools. As Jackie and I went in, we spoke to them, all the children that we support throughout Sutton. And the theme was, what I am most proud of, stroke love being about a traveller. So it was very much left up to the children as to what they wanted to draw, what they wanted to present in their pictures. So most of the entries were completed in schools. So schools were really, really accommodating and allowed the children time during golden time to complete their entries. So we put them into four different age categories. I asked two colleagues from Cognis, independent, obviously, to judge the competition, and they picked our four winners. But what was really lovely is that they actually took the time to give feedback on every single entry. So Jackie and I were able to feedback to the children what they loved about their pictures, which was really, really nice. We let the four winners choose the prizes that they wanted to have, and we got permission from parents to take photos of the children holding their winning entries, which you can see on the TES at Cognis website. And what was really lovely is, like Jackie said, just the engagement from the parents as well. They were actually just as excited as the children about the competition. And when I rang the parents of the four winners, I think they were probably more delighted than the children, more excited. But yeah, so it was a really joyous, happy, nice thing to do. And I just think it really sort of built bridges relationship-wise, and just it was a really positive thing with a real positive outcome.
A really nice way to promote Traveller History Month.
So we've mentioned Traveller History Month a couple of times. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So Traveller History Month really began in 2008. So it was at a time when the government had done lots of research and reports, and they found that travellers were one of the most at-risk groups within education. There was a lot of funding put into place. So in 2008, it was set up for June to be Traveller History Month. So it would be a time to really kind of find out about the history of travellers, explore the culture of different groups within travellers, because traveller itself is an umbrella term and there are many different groups that fall within that. So it's not just Irish travellers, it's not just English gypsies. There's fairground, there's showmen, there are bargees who live on the boats. There's all different groups of travellers. So it's a really good way for people to learn about their culture and the different groups, and find out that they may have some of those pupils within their school, and find out more about it, and able to be able to reflect it when they're celebrating in schools, such as with assemblies or work or things like that, to make those pupils feel included. And it has kind of taken hold, and it's been taking place every June since then. Obviously last year wasn't quite as good with COVID and the impact of the pandemic, but there were some online resources still that took place, and hopefully following on from this year it will start to gather speed again. And as I said, there's lots of resources on our website and videos that you can look at if you do want to find out more, or perhaps help celebrate in your own setting.
So it sounds like a key part of your role really is to promote Traveller History Month and to provide resources and insights and information for other professionals, so that it raises their awareness of the culture and, again, inclusive practice, which is a real focus for schools. One of the things you've both mentioned is relationships, and I'm keen to explore that a little bit further, because you seem to be really trusted by the community and welcomed in. Why do you think that is? How have you built those bridges?
I think it comes through time and through performance. So I think, I mean, I've worked here for just over 6 years now, and initially, I had bright purple hair at the time, and I was told to keep my bright purple hair because I would be known as the traveller lady with the bright purple hair, and it was a good way of being recognised quite quickly, and it did help. I just think that sometimes in the past they've probably had people that have come on sites or come into their lives and they haven't had the support that they wanted, and they've not been very trusting. And I think over the years we've proved that we're there to help. We'll help with absolutely anything that they need. Although our focus is education, our job is also to support those families and children around education and the child's well-being. We get asked to do all sorts. And I mean, just off the top of my head recently, there was a parent who was struggling to find a dentist. So she was actually struggling to find a dentist that would take NHS patients. So I offered to help with that. And in fairness, I did have to ring about 7 or 8 before I found one that would take them on, and then helped with the registration process. So that was all sorted out, because one of the children needed urgent dental care. And I know, well, I'll let Jackie obviously tell you about the other wonderful thing that's happened recently with vaccinations and her great success with that. But I just think that's it. We're almost like a one-stop shop for them. If they've got an issue, they've got a problem, or they're coming up against barriers and they don't know what to do, they will give us a call and ask if we can help. If we can, we will. If we can't, then we will signpost and assist and point them in the correct direction and make sure that it's still completed, even if it's not by us. So we won't just sort of leave them hanging. Whatever they need, we will always help them as much as we possibly can. But yeah, Jackie, your vaccination success.
Yeah, well, I think leading on from what Anna said, part of the reason we can build that relationship is, as I've said, lots of travellers have limited literacy skills, and everything these days is online or forms or phone calls. Whereas we take the time to go up to site, we meet the families in person, we support their children in school. So there's that constant relationship. We're always phoning to feedback or to ask if they're okay. And likewise, we're asking them to contact us if there's any problem. So we are that bridge between them and other services, which previously they might have found difficult to access, or they might have found it really hard. Sometimes unfortunately, there is still a lot of prejudice in the world. And we have found with some of our families, when they try to register, like Anna said, for dentists or even doctors, they can face some discrimination just because of the way they speak or the perception that those people have of travellers and their community. So we are one of the groups where we support for education, and we're always there for the children and helping within schools. We are that trusted face that's always there. And like Anna says, it does build up over time. But the thing is, they rely on oral communication. They want phone calls. They want you to come and see them face to face. And that's what we do to keep that relationship going. And we were able to use that recently, as Anna said. So what with the COVID pandemic and travellers being quite a vulnerable group and sometimes not accessing the health services that they need to, we were able to work with a local NHS service to arrange for a doctor to go onto site with the COVID vaccinations and provide it for people on the site. So the reason we were able to do that is we used our relationships with the families to explain what was happening, to let them know that this was available to them, but also that it wasn't compulsory, but they had the people there that they could ask questions, find out about, and we really took the time to make sure they understood what was happening, they felt safe about it and not pressurised, and it was on their terms and in their own environment where they felt safe and secure. So it was really successful. That joint collaborative working with our colleagues in the NHS meant that most of the adults on that site have had now have their second COVID vaccination dose. So it was a really successful piece of work.
And it's also going to be an ongoing thing. So it's NHS are going to work with us and the families on site with other health issues or assist them with any other issues that they may have. And I think there was talk of having a coffee morning on site within the next month to encourage those families to come join in, chat about whatever it is they want to in private with the NHS staff. So it's kind of going to lead on to other more positive things as well, which is really, really great.
So relationships and partnership work, again, is critical to your role. And that seems to be a theme running through all of the work that you do. It's relationships with families, relationships with schools, relationship with other professionals and agencies to really help bridge the gap and make those connections with other services that really support the family and the community to access education and have their broader needs met as well. Being part of the traveller community naturally means that some families will travel, and you've already mentioned, Jackie, that not all families travel now, but some still do for work. Can you tell us a little bit more about why people travel, what sort of roles they do, and where do they tend to go?
Yeah, certainly. So there's various reasons that they might travel. The main one is for work, so it might be seasonal work. They follow the work where it goes. So we have travellers that move around within the UK at different times of the year, just depending on where work contracts might become available. We also have several families that travel to Germany a number of times throughout the year, again, for work purposes. And we also have some that travel to America, and that's a constant to and from. So they have consistent work that they go over to and then come back to, but they do always come back to the permanent base here. So some travellers are what we call highly mobile travellers. So they don't have a permanent base. They literally are in a caravan moving from place to place wherever they can find work. And those are the ones that probably face the most challenges, because obviously if you're constantly on the move and don't have a fixed address, it's really hard to access school places, it's really hard to access health services and things like that. And we do try to help where we can, even if we can manage to get the children into school for a week while they're pausing on the road. But obviously it is difficult with legislation. So governments and councils have put in legislation to stop travellers from stopping in different places, although that has recently been challenged and overturned by the High Court, which is good news for travellers. Because it really is changing and stopping their whole way of life and who they are. So it's really important that that was recognised by the courts, which is a positive move. And then we have our families, which are on sites here in Sutton. And some of those might not travel at all for the whole year. Some might only travel for holidays, the same as the rest of us. And then the other times they might travel is for things such as horse fairs, which is a really important thing in the traveller community. It's a place where the main idea is that they go to trade, so they're buying and selling horses, and it's a proud part of traveller culture, displaying their horses and how they're looked after. But it's also a good time to come and network and meet people and meet families and really come together as a community. So you quite often hear about Appleby Fair, which is usually during June, but this year been moved back to August because of COVID. So big events like that are a reason they travel. And then I think I'm not sure if we've mentioned, but some of our traveller groups are strong Catholic faith followers, and they may travel for certain religious events.
The other thing to mention, I think, as well, is I don't think we have any at the moment, but I know we certainly have had several in the past, where if a family is based in one particular part of England, but as Jackie said, they might have a regular place of work, so they'll travel to and from one other place. Quite often we do what's called a dual registration. So the child will be registered at the school where they permanently live, and they'll also be registered at a school in the borough where they regularly visit, so that it's a smooth transition. So as soon as that child goes travelling with the family, then they can instantly access education, which works really, really well, because you don't have to go through the whole admissions process, which obviously can lose time for that child's education. So that's a really positive step.
So in terms of travelling for work, you've mentioned horse trading being an important part of the traveller culture. What are some of the other roles that travellers fulfil?
Oh, wow, there's quite a few, isn't there? There's building. I think there's quite a few. Fencing, putting up fencing. Driveways, that's a quite commonly known one. Painting and decorating.
So it really is those trades, yeah, and professions that you can move around, and that you can follow the work where it is. And that, again, is based, because historically travellers were people that would move around, and they might help farm the fields and do really, it's always been very manual, very physical, quite often outdoor labour, which suited their lifestyle and suited their way of life, moving around door to door. And that's really what's come through now, is those sorts of trades that they can take with them wherever they go. So it is all those labours, like Anna just mentioned, things like driveways and roofing, and quite often they might even set up their own businesses. And again, it really is so that they've got that fast, ready income that they can take wherever they're travelling.
We've talked a little bit about how you support children into education from nursery and then into reception and primary school. Can you tell me a little bit about how you support traveller children into secondary education?
This is probably one of our biggest challenges. Again, historically, for many of the different traveller groups, secondary, there isn't a lot of value on secondary education. It's not something they have necessarily had positive experiences with themselves, or they don't feel the value of the different subjects and things that are learned at secondary level. So really our job is to kind of, using our relationship and the success of education within primary, we make sure we identify those children who are due to transition to high school very early on. We work closely with the families to encourage them to send their children on to secondary school. We talk them through the benefits. We talk them through what the consequences would be if they decide not to. But it really is about building on that positive experience that the children have had moving through primary, and then working both with the primary school and the secondary schools, again, to make sure that they're aware of this community, the challenges they face, and so that we can have things set up to really kind of stop those barriers before they even become an issue. So silly things like uniform for secondary school. Quite often children get into trouble for forgetting a tie, or, you know, not having the right badge on for a day. Now, for travellers, that can be quite tricky, especially if they live in mobiles or caravans where space is limited. And traveller families are often quite proud about how their houses look. They don't have space or want things left lying around here, there and everywhere. So for a traveller in secondary school with bags full of books and different pieces of uniform, it can be quite hard to manage. So what we've done is work really closely with some of our secondary schools in Sutton to put things, a really more flexible and understanding approach in place. It might be having some parts of the uniform and books kept in school that they can collect as and when they arrive. It might be providing space and support to complete homework within the school day, because again, having the space to complete it at home, or even the support from parents, it's just not there for a lot of our traveller families. So it's really just kind of being aware of those issues and able to put things in place before they become an issue to make the transition as smooth as possible. And again, whereas other families might research different secondary schools and go to the open days, some of our families may not be even aware that that's the process. So we talk them through the different schools, we talk them through what the transition days are. We may even attend open evenings with them, or be there on the first day of school for that child to help them feel settled and to help make that transition really successful.
And also our secondary school advisor in the team runs a transition programme with the year six children who are going up to high school in the last half term of the summer term. So it's giving the child the opportunity to ask questions if they've got any worries or anxiety about going up to high school, then they'll work through those with them, but also give them an idea of how things will work at school. Just really simple things like you're not going to be in the same classroom with the same teacher, you're going to be moving around the school, but don't worry because they will help you with that until you get used to it, etc. You're going to have lots of different teachers teaching different subjects. So it's just preparing that child so that they're not overwhelmed on their first day of high school. And also during that same period, there's a lot of paperwork coming home to parents. There's forms to fill in, medical forms to fill in. There's parent meeting dates. There's induction days for the children. So again, it's just about asking schools to forward that information to us as well as the parents. And then we can call parents and offer the help to fill in those forms and make sure that they've got the dates put in their phone or written in the diary, so they don't miss those important dates for themselves and the children.
So both of you talk really passionately about your role, and it's clear that you really enjoy the work that you do. Can you tell me one of your highlights of working with traveller families, or what is it that you most enjoy about the job that you do?
For me, it's easy, the children. Particularly because I work with the young ones, they're just adorable. They are so keen and eager to learn, and they're just like little sponges. They just want to soak it all up, and they're so eager to please. And just the joy you get from talking to them during the session, you know, that couple of minutes at the beginning, couple of minutes at the end, where you're having a little bit of a chat about how their weekend or their week's been. And just the joy you get from those conversations, they're characters, and they are so entertaining. And yeah, for me, that's by far the nicest part of my job.
And I think I have to agree with Anna. I did a similar role before working for the Travel Education Service, where I was doing one-to-one intervention with children, but it was obviously a different kind of community of children. And there is just no comparison at all. Traveller children, like Anna said, they adore the one-to-one attention. They love being with adults. They love learning. They want to learn. And quite often the reason they haven't been able to is because they've moved around or they've started late. So they love any opportunity where they can learn and they can improve. And as Anna said, they're always colourful characters. I think not one of the children that I teach fails to make me smile every time I see them. And it's the little things. You know you're making a difference. Schools, they can't always offer the same amount of time and input that we can on a one-to-one basis. And it's little things. I was working with one of my year six pupils a few years ago, and I've been working with him since he was in year one or two, I think. And we were writing a sentence, and he said something about spelling said, and he went, you taught me that when I was in year two. And it's those little things, and you think, I did that, and I made a difference. And not only that, he's remembered it. And it's just having that positive impact. And not only with the children, I think, but with the families, like Anna said, they trust us and they come to us and they ask for help. And it's, you feel really valued and really just wonderful that you are able to help those families, because they are too frightened or they don't know who else to speak to. So the fact that they will speak to us, even if it's completely nothing to do with our role, they might come to us and ask, and we can put them in touch with someone and we can help that family get the support that they need. And also on top of that, what's really rewarding is we quite often get contacted from professionals or schools that we don't even work with that have been recommended to us by people and schools that we do already work with. And it's just really nice to feel that we are obviously helping, and those schools rely on our support enough to be able to go out and tell other people, go and talk to this team, they'll be able to help you.
Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been really interesting hearing about the traveller community and your knowledge and experience in supporting them. I think what this conversation's really shown me today is the importance of your role, the importance of relationships and developing those, not just with the community, but with our partners and with our schools, to really promote inclusive practice and remove barriers to learning for the children and young people that you support. Thank you.